Welcome to the Vineyard Church of Greater Portland podcast. We hope you enjoy this message by our guest speaker. For more podcasts and other resources, please visit www.vineyardportland.org.
So, a couple weeks ago, I had the privilege of going to a community meal on Brown Street in Westbrook. And we do this once a month as a church, and more specifically, I mostly kind of do it just because I'm leading the outreach ministry here locally, 54, and a lot of what we do is community-based, and we are in the community. So I was able to go down actually with my kids, with Jackson and Rylan, a couple weeks ago, and we had a meal with the community in Brown Street, and they do this every single month, once a month. And actually, I encourage you, if you guys are interested in coming with me, I'd love to have you. So just by way of that, if you're interested in doing this, it's open to anyone here in the church. Love to have as many people come with me as possible. But, so we go down there every single month, and we just hang with the community there. They're all kind of invited to come, and there's a meal that's put on. And it's actually put on by Opportunity Alliance, which is a nonprofit organization in the greater Portland area. And it's put on by a lot of the leaders and the community leaders in that area, in the Brown Street area and all the surrounding streets and that whole location. So we go there every single month. And really, we go there because we want to hang with our community. And so each morning or each evening when we get there, I just kind of survey the lay of the land. I kind of hang, look at some people, and I just kind of strike up conversations with whoever God kind of leads me to or whoever God puts in my path. And so I had this conversation with this one guy, and it was after I made an announcement there. So the people that were running the meal said, "Hey, Chad, would you want to make an announcement about Easterfest?" Which was our event last weekend, and I said, "Yeah, sure, I'll make an announcement," because there was a ton of community people there. There was a ton of people from the area, and it would have been really cool for them to hear about what was going on so they could bring their families. So I make the announcement, and after I made the announcement, I kind of went to the back of the room, and I was just hanging out with some people, and this guy comes up to me, and I'll just call him George. His name's not George, but I'm just going to call him George. He comes up to me, and he says, "Hey, Chad." I said, "Yeah, man." He goes, "You know, I've been homeless for a really long time." I said, "Oh, really?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "It's been really hard. I've moved up here from Massachusetts a really long time ago to work with my sister in a business that failed. And because of a lot of other things that happened." I'm not that close to the speaker. Come on now. So as a result of that, a couple different things happened in his life. He ended up being homeless. And he was literally living in a tent in the woods around in the Brown Street area through the winter. Remember like when it was like minus 10 for like 2 weeks straight? This guy was living in a tent. So he comes up to me and says, "I've been living in a tent for the last 7 years and I've been homeless. Can you help me?" I said, "I don't know, George. Tell me your story." So he tells me his story, and it ended up being where he had a housing provision for a certain amount of money to get an apartment. And he said, "I have this housing provision that I've been given through a program, and I have no way of finding a home because there's no options out there. There's no apartments out there for me. I have tried and I've tried and I've tried." And so I sat with this man for half an hour, 45 minutes, just talking to him about his life. And I said, "George, you know what? I'm going to help you. I know some people who know some people. And I'm going to try to find an apartment for you." And I took his number and he took my number. And that was the end of it. Why do I share that story? I share that story this morning because I want to ask you a question. And the question is this: what is our primary and main responsibility as as followers of Jesus, I'm going to stick over here. I think I need to speak to these people over here. As primary followers of Jesus, what is our mandate? What is our responsibility this morning? Some would say it's to be part of a church family and to come to church and to be part of the community of Jesus. Absolutely. That is a responsibility. But I don't think it's the primary responsibility. It's crucial to our walk. Some would say, I think becoming more mature and growing in my prayer life is my primary responsibility. I would say that is really, really important to your walk. But I don't think it's the primary responsibility. Some would say, I really need to know this word inside and out. And I would say, you're right, you do. It's a responsibility. God has called you to know his word. But I'm going to suggest to you this morning that the primary responsibility and mandate that God has given us and that Jesus has given us this morning is to win. And more specifically, to win people. To win people for Jesus. I feel, and I think the scripture shows this, that we're going to look at in a minute, that our primary responsibility is to win people for Jesus. Why is that our primary responsibility, you ask? I'll tell you why. Because this book right here, this book is a story. This book is a story about God and his relentless pursuit for each and every one of us in this room. It's also a story about his relentless pursuit for humanity and for the world. That is why our primary responsibility is to win people for Jesus, because God's primary responsibility and his primary aim and goal is to win people and reconcile them back to himself. He wants us to partner with him as earthly agents of reconciliation, of his relentless pursuit of his love and freedom. That is our primary responsibility. It's not to say that everything else I laid out and everything else I mentioned isn't important. It's vital to our faith. Okay? But if we are focused on those things and neglect to understand the fact that our primary responsibility is to win people for Jesus, it doesn't matter how much you know this word. It doesn't matter how many times you step into a building on a Sunday morning and hang out with people that believe the same thing you do. Because if you are not winning people for Jesus, it doesn't matter. So that's what we're supposed to do. How are we supposed to do that? That's the bigger question. How are we supposed to win people for Jesus? We're going to look at a way. We're going to look at a passage that Paul writes in his first book to the Corinthians. And in this passage, he sort of lays out this way of approaching how we win people for Jesus. Still there. He lays it out pretty specifically. Well, I wouldn't say specifically, but he lays it out in a way that makes us think, oh my gosh, like really? That's the way we're supposed to approach this thing? Yeah. And we're gonna read it in a second. But in this passage that Paul lays out in 1 Corinthians, he sort of gives us the mindset that we need to have to win people for Jesus. And it's in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. This passage, I think, was really controversial for the time in which he said it, the time in which he wrote it, the culture in which he wrote it to. It was controversial, and I think it's controversial for us today. A lot of people, I think, probably read this in his letter and said, we can't do that. I can't do that. So let's read it. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 19. In the NIV, this is what it says. Do you have it up there? So everybody can see it. Paul goes on. Paul says this. Though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. Though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. Paul's saying here that it's totally plausible to be free and be a slave at the same time. You're thinking to yourself, how is that even possible? Aren't those two completely opposite of one another? If I am free, how am I a slave? And if I am a slave, what freedom am I afforded? The word slave here is this word we call, and it's used in the Greek, it's called doulos. And it's derived from the word doulao. Doulao. But the word Paul uses here is the word doulos. And this is what it says. It says, it means basically devoted to another to the disregard of one's own interest. One who gives up himself up to another's will, a servant or attendant. So that's the word that Paul uses. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, Paul's saying that he is free from every man so that he can be a slave to every man. But the word he's using here is an idea of a voluntarily giving up action. He's voluntarily giving up what is rightfully his in order to be a slave. And by doing that, he is free. And if you look at the whole chapter, chapter 9, Paul starts off the chapter basically saying that he has rights as an apostle. He has rights as an apostle. And one of those rights is to be compensated financially. He goes on to make the argument in chapter 9 about being compensated financially, about how he is well within his right to do that, whether it's by giving him a place to stay when he's with in a certain town or in a certain place in a certain community, whether he's, you know, whether you're putting food on the table for him, whatever the case may be. Paul makes this plea and says to the people in Corinth, listen, I have rights as an apostle, and I am completely within my right to ask these things from you because of the nature of my work. But he goes on to say in that chapter that he's voluntarily giving up those rights. Why? He's giving up those rights because it actually allows him to be free. And if he's free, the only one he can be a slave to is anyone he wants. It's really cool. He sums up the argument this way in verse 11. He says, if we have sown spiritual seed among you, is it too much if we reap a material harvest from you? Like, is it so much like what we've done and we have come to this place, we have shared the news of the gospel, we've shared about Jesus, that you can find hope in him, that your life can be transformed by him. We have done that for you. Is it so much to ask from you to get a material harvest? Is it not too much to ask to be compensated for what we have shared to you and with you? And that's the point he's making earlier in the chapter. He's saying, I have these rights, and I'm well within my right to ask you for these things in exchange for what I've given you. But then a little further down, this is what he says. He says, nevertheless, We have not made use of this right, but we endure everything and anything rather than put an obstacle in the way of the gospel. He has the right, but he has decided it is in his best interest and in the best interest of the gospel of Jesus not to make use of that right. Why? Because it'll make him a slave to whoever financially compensates him. He says, I can't receive financial compensation because in effect, it will not allow me to be free. And if I can't be free, then I can't be a slave to everyone. And more specifically to the work of Jesus. So he lays down this right and says, even though I'm entitled to it, I'm laying it down for the sake of being free so that I can be a slave. It's really cool. So how is he a slave if he belongs to no one? Well, the word slave, like we said before, is this idea of a voluntary action. Okay? He voluntarily gave up himself. He voluntarily gave up himself for the work of the kingdom. He voluntarily gave up himself so that he could be free. It's really cool. So what does that look like? What does that look like in real practical terms in Paul's ministry? He says, I am now free, but I've been made a slave to all. So he begins to flesh that argument out a little bit. He begins to sort of, you know, give some context into that whole statement. He says this. He says, a little bit further down in the chapter, he says, to the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. So when Paul was in the presence of the Jews in Corinth, he would do what it took in order for them to understand the message of the gospel and the message of Jesus. He did what it took, and that's the title of the message this morning, is whatever it takes. Paul made himself a slave to every man to do whatever it took in order for them to understand and to hear the good news of Jesus in Corinth. So he said to the Jews, I became a Jew. So when he was hanging out with Jewish people, when he was hanging out with Jewish leaders in Corinth, what he would do is he would adhere to a lot of their practices. He would adhere to a lot of their ceremonies. They had dietary restrictions. He would obey those because he was a Jew. I mean, Paul grew up a Jew. He knew everything about the Jewish culture. So he understood that if he would not do that, that would create an obstacle for them to hear the word and the gospel of Jesus. So he had to make himself a slave to the Jews in order for them to understand the message of Jesus. Paul was trying to eliminate every obstacle possible to every people group in Corinth as possible so that they could hear about who Jesus was. So when he was with the Jews, he would eat like the Jews. He would believe like the Jews. He would understand the practices and the ceremonies of the Jews. He probably even though the text doesn't say this, he probably tried to make the correlation between the messianic prophecies in the Old Testament to Jesus, because for the Jews, the Messiah had to be prophesied about in the Old Testament. So when he was with the Jews, he probably tried to make the connection between Jesus now is who the messianic the prophets were talking about in the Old Testament. So he probably kind of took that approach when he was with them. It doesn't say that, but I can imagine Paul, being a very smart man, would say, listen, I'm trying to give you some evidence here of the fact that Jesus is who he says he is. He's the one that was talked about. And the Jews would understand that because they were Jewish. Why did he do that? Because he knew if he could eliminate obstacles, that they would be more able to understand the gospel of Jesus. They wouldn't be hung up on the obstacles. He was willing to do whatever it took. He also said this, to those under the law, I became like one under the law, so as to win those under the law. So when he was with people that observed the law, and more specifically the Jewish law, he would do the same. Paul knew he wasn't subject to the law, but he voluntarily made himself subjected to the law in order to eliminate the obstacle, so that people could really understand and focus on what he was saying, not necessarily what he was doing or not doing. Paul goes on to say this in verse 21, to those not having the law, or non-Jews, I became like one not having the law, so as to win those not having the law. He became a slave to the non-Jews. So wherever he went, he changed his approach. And for Paul, that meant eating whatever he wanted. For people that were not under the law, most likely the people in Corinth that weren't Jewish, most likely were Roman or Greek. Not everybody, but I mean, for the most part, that's probably who they were. So they had very different cultural practices. They didn't have dietary restrictions like the Jews did. So when Paul was hanging out with them, he ate whatever he wanted, because he understood that his faith didn't matter. Wasn't his faith was not determined by what he put in his mouth. Paul didn't consider himself under the law or not under the law. He considered himself under Christ's law. And Christ's law was what? To love your God with all of your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. It was grace-filled. So he considered himself under Christ's law. So in his mind, if Paul knew he wasn't being disobedient to the law of Christ, if he wasn't being disobedient to the spirit of Jesus, he was free to do whatever he wanted. He could be a slave because of his freedom to do whatever he wanted. He wasn't being financially supported. He didn't have any sort of financial ties to anyone. He wasn't under any obligation to spend more time with Jewish leaders than he was with Gentile leaders or non-Jews. He could go where he wanted, when he wanted. And let me say this, when he was probably talking to non-Jewish people about Jesus, he probably didn't even mention the prophets, because they wouldn't have a clue about what he's talking about. So Paul changed his message and his approach everywhere he went. I mean, the central theme of the message is Jesus and his love and his grace and his mercy and his power and his forgiveness. But how he communicated that changed depending on the situation and who he was dealing with. So he sums up his approach this way in verse 22. He says, I have become all things to all people, that by all possible means I may win some. Or he uses save some. He uses win in a couple other verses, and then he uses this idea of the word save in the last verse. He says, I have become all things to all people so that I may save some. That is sort of the crux of the message this morning. So what does that look like in our context here in this church, in this community? What does that look like? What does that look like practically when we are trying to win people, as Paul would say? He did all these things so he could win people for Jesus. And I submit to you this morning that our primary mandate and responsibility on this earth is to win people for Jesus, to partner with God so that people can understand how amazing the love of God is and what he has to offer us in this life and in the life to come. So what does that look like today? What was Paul doing that we can take from now? Well, there's a phrase for what he did that is kind of popular now, I guess, but it's widely used, I think, by the church, and I think by a lot of other institutions and organizations. But what Paul basically was doing was being culturally relevant. In fact, Paul was being more than culturally relevant. He was being subculturally relevant. Okay? He was part of the Corinth culture, but yet there were all these subcultures within the culture. There were Jews, there were non-Jews, there were Greeks, there were Romans, because the Corinth culture was very diverse. It was mostly Greek influenced, but it was a Roman colony, which means it was basically a Roman territory. So Rome had conquered it. Rome was, in a sense, in power, but the culture had many different flavors. You know, the Roman culture was, in the religious practice of the Romans, was much different than the Greeks. And obviously it was much different than the Jews. And obviously it was much different than the Christians, because you had new Christians there in this church that he's writing to. So you have all these different cultures going on, all these religious sort of ideas and ways of pursuing God and gods. And Paul had to really navigate the nuances of those different cultures. And that's why he used this approach. That's why he said, hey man, I'll do whatever it takes. I'll be all things to all people, you know? To the Jews, I'll be like them. To the non-Jews, I'll be like them. And I think that was really radical in his time, because people were like, Jewish people were like, you can't go eat whatever you want with them. Like, and I'm sure word spread about Paul. It wasn't like he did all this stuff in a vacuum, you know? He was like, I mean, I'm sure the non-Jews were like, oh, you go over there and you eat with Jews and you sort of do what they do. And then you come over here and you know, I don't know. But I mean, I'm sure there was some rumblings going on in the community. Like, oh, this guy comes in here and preaches about Jesus, and yet he goes over there and does that when he wants, and he goes over there and does that when he wants. But Paul's overarching message was, listen, I'll do whatever it takes just for you to hear the gospel. I'll be all things to all people. I don't care. Because what I eat or don't eat doesn't matter. What matters is that I tell you the truth about who Jesus is, and that you get to experience his life-giving grace and mercy in your life. So that's what he did. So you have this huge sort of diverse culture that Paul is trying to reach in every different way. And the same is true for us this morning as a church. If we're not culturally relevant, we will lose the culture. And if we lose the culture, if we cannot be accessible and relevant to the culture, how will they hear the message of Jesus? We have to be culturally relevant. It doesn't mean we compromise what we believe. It doesn't mean we put down our fundamental understanding and belief of who God is and the kingdom and Jesus. But we have to be nuanced in how we communicate that message depending on what we're doing in the community. And a perfect example of that is Easterfest. We had Easterfest here last weekend. And it was a really successful event. We had close to 500 people come through this place in 2 hours from the community. We had people from Old Orchard Beach. We had people from Wells. I mean, we had people from everywhere. It was like insane. And that event is a primary example of being culturally relevant. We are providing an opportunity for the community and for people to come to our facility. We're talking about people that would never step foot in a church, ever. We are providing an opportunity for people to come into this facility, feel comfortable, because we are being culturally relevant. The Vineyard, as a movement, has cultural relevance as one of its core values, one of its five core values. And this is what the movement, what the Vineyard Church movement says about cultural relevance. It says, we are called to bring the gospel of the kingdom to every nook and cranny of creation, faithfully translating the message of Jesus in language and forms that are relevant in diverse peoples and cultures. That's our stance on cultural relevance as a Vineyard Church. And more importantly, what our local expression of that is in our mission statement. You can read this. as a local church. To be a people reaching the unchurched in relevant ways that meet real needs. And Local 854 is the practical expression of cultural relevance in this church for this community. Going back to Easterfest, you know, a lot of people might say, you know what, I think you compromise the message of Jesus by doing that. I think you take the focus off of Jesus when you let little kids come here and hunt for eggs. I get that. But let me ask you this. If I get one family in this place on a Saturday because of that event, and they are comfortable here, and they come back on a Sunday to hear the message of Jesus because they were able to come here on a Saturday and feel welcomed and feel comfortable and feel accepted, if I can get that family and if we can get that family back here on a Sunday to listen to the message of Jesus, I'll take that trade-off any day of the week. And I think Paul will too. I think Paul would too. He said, I'll be all things to all people. On the face, it might look like compromise, and I get it. That's why it's a little controversial. All things to all people. This idea is a little controversial. I get it. Because, I mean, on the face, it looks like compromise. But I don't believe that's the case, because being culturally relevant is big picture thinking, okay? Myopic thinking says, to me personally, myopic thinking is when those guys get in the door, we gotta be on it. We gotta be like telling them about Jesus as soon as they walk in those doors. We gotta do some way to relay the message of Jesus overtly when they come in those doors. I believe personally that's myopic thinking. Big picture thinking is, let's bring them in, let's make them comfortable, let's make them welcome and accepted, and guess what? Let's trust God that they're gonna come back on a Sunday, hear the message of Jesus, and then their whole lives will be transformed. Why? Because we did a seemingly unreligious, unspiritual Easter event on a Saturday. Some churches don't believe that, and I get that. But if we're gonna be culturally relevant like Paul was in Corinth, that's part of the expression. Cultural relevance is like having the Fall Fest here in the fall. You know, we sit down as a leadership team when we do these events like Easter Fest and Fall Fest, and we think to ourselves, what are some things that are really popular right now that would draw people to this event? What are some things that would draw people to this event and draw people to our facility? We are intentional about being culturally relevant. We are intentional about providing things that are really popular that will draw people in. Why? Because if they can come here on a Saturday, they just might come here on a Sunday. And I'll take that. That's why we're involved in the Communities That Care Coalition Board as a church. We partner with a nonprofit organization in the community that basically specializes in preventing risky behaviors for teenagers in the city. We are part of that coalition because we feel like it's culturally relevant to be sowing into the community and putting our two cents in to understanding the struggles of teenagers in the city. Why do we do that? Because we're into building relationships, not obstacles. That's what Paul did. Paul built relationships, not obstacles. He was into breaking down obstacles. He wanted people to understand the message of Jesus, and he was willing to do whatever it took outside of compromising his belief and faith in Jesus. But he was willing to do whatever it took because he was into building relationships and not obstacles. That's why we go to Brown Street, like I mentioned earlier with the guy, the homeless guy. That's why we go to Brown Street. Because guess what? There is nothing more culturally relevant than sitting down face to face with someone and giving them an hour for them to explain the struggles of their life. There is nothing more culturally relevant, especially in the age of technology, where everything is instant messaging and texting and digital communication, there is nothing more culturally relevant than sitting down with someone and being like, you know what, I am going to give you 45 minutes of my time so that you can feel loved and appreciated. And that's what we do on Wednesday nights on Brown Street. Why? Because we build relationships, not obstacles. It's the reason why on Friday night we have a food pantry here. It's the reason why Doug Clements over there doesn't just hang out over here and serve food to the people that come through. He is in the lobby talking with people face to face, learning their language so that they can feel more comfortable having a conversation with him. Why? Because we build relationships, not obstacles. We don't ask people when they come in the door on a Friday night to get food to present their salvation card, right? The last time I checked, Jesus didn't tell his disciples to go into the crowd of 5,000 and figure out how many were saved and how many believed in him to check on their spiritual condition before he decided to multiply the fish and the bread to give to them. I don't see that in the scripture. He wasn't concerned at that point with that. He was concerned with building relationships. He was concerned with providing the need. It is why we do local in the square in the summertime. We go down to Portland, in town, Monument Square. We hang out. We play music. We minister to people that are just literally living on the street, engaging with them, talking with them. Why? Because we're into building relationships, not obstacles. God has called us to be an integral part of this community that we're in this morning. We are an integral part of this community. And the church, as well as local E54, is determined and committed to doing whatever it takes to be all things to all people. And I encourage you, some of these things that I mentioned this morning, if you've never done one of them, if you've never come on an event or done any of the things that I've mentioned, I encourage you to be a part of it. I encourage you to be a part of some of the things that we're doing in the community in order to be all things to all people. Because really what it comes down to is us as individuals. To be all things to all people in this community. We, as the church, are called out. And the idea of the church and the word that is used to describe the church literally means called out ones. We have been called out of the world to be in the world. We've been called out of the world to be in the world. And that's what Paul was saying. He's saying, I'll be whatever it takes to whoever. But my end game is this, that they encounter Jesus. And I don't care whatever it takes. If I were to use a word to describe Paul's approach, and I think it would be really good for us to learn this word and to understand this word as the church this morning, the idea and the word that I would use to describe him, if I had to use one descriptive word for his approach would be this, accessible. Paul was accessible. And the word accessible just basically means this. And it really relies to someone of importance or someone with great authority. It says this, someone who is accessible is this, friendly and easy to talk to, approachable or easily understood. We as the church have to be accessible to the community in which we live and in the community to which we serve. That should be our approach to the culture and the community that we are a part of. If we are not accessible, listen to this. If we are not accessible, we are not relevant. And if we are not relevant, ho! If we are not relevant, I know. If we are not relevant, there is nothing worse than I can imagine for the church to be not relevant. There is no worse thing I can think of than an irrelevant church. So in order to be relevant, we have to be accessible. We need to continually examine ourselves so that we can remain accessible, so that we can remain relevant. If we don't, we will lose our accessibility. That is why whatever we do here on a Sunday morning, from the worship to the message to Vineyard Kids to Teen Church to, you know, media to visuals, our approach to prayer, discipleship, leadership training, it all has to be relevant. It all has to be accessible. Someone should be able to walk through those doors and feel like they are comfortable enough to be a part of this community and to be a part of this community and a functioning part of this community, because we have to be accessible. We have to be relevant. So everything from our outreach events to what we do in the community, it's all about being accessible and relevant. It means that we can't stand at an arm's length with the community. We can't stand at arm's length because there's so much more that unites us than divides us. We, as the church, need to be intentional about sowing into the community. And I say this all the time. I'm about to go back there and get Jay. We are so intentional about this idea in Locally 54 and as the church, that we are to sow into our community so that it prospers. Because if the community prospers, so too will we prosper. That is our vision. That is our focus for Locally 54. And that is our vision as the church for the community around us. Because they deserve it. They deserve it. Is it me? I'll put this down. I'm almost done anyway. They deserve a church that is going to sow into them. They deserve a church that is going to love them. They deserve a church that is accessible and relevant to their needs and to their life. That's what they deserve. They deserve a church that is going to do whatever it takes to win and to be all things to all people in order to win some for Jesus. Amen? And that's what I got. So let's stand. Let's stand this morning.